So I'm going to talk about definitive management of pelvic fractures. And, you know, in the previous talk, we covered, you know, sort of initial management, how to deal with pelvic hemorrhage, stuff like that. So here we're going to talk about, like, you know, how do you definitively fix these things. So I think there's two really broad ways to think about it. You know, maybe a couple different, you know, ways, maybe three ways. I mean, one is thinking about open techniques versus percutaneous techniques. And the second is, you know, thinking about, like, you know, anterior fixation versus posterior fixation. So a lot of people ask, you know, if you have this unstable pelvic fracture, you know, do we focus on fixing it in the back? Do you focus on the front? What's the order that you go in if you have to do both? Etc. And then, you know, whether, you know, this is something that we can, you know, especially in the posterior ring, can we fix this percutaneously? Do we need to open it? You know, etc. So, so let's talk about the anterior and posterior thing first. So, if you have, I think some of the, you know, the simple ones to think about, you know, if you have a true APC type injury. Now, remember, not every symphyseal widening is an APC injury, right? I mean, you can have some symphyseal disruption in a vertical shear type or combined mechanism type injury where, you know, you have a tile C injury, there's vertical instability. So if there's vertical instability, there's going to be some type of lesion anteriorly, and often that can be right through the symphysis. You know, it could be, you know, superior inferior ramus fractures, but, you know, if it's through the symphysis, there's going to be a little bit of widening, there's going to be disruption there, but you really don't have that sort of, you know, open book widening of the pelvic floor and everything like that. So, so I mean, there is a distinction there. So in the true APC injury where you have, like, just, you know, massive widening of the anterior ring, you got to go anteriorly, right? I mean, so that's a simple one, right? You're going to have to do a symphyseal plate, and definitive management with these usually is going to be like a binder or an X-fix. And then, you know, internal fixation would be a plate. Now we usually use, you know, malleable plates. They now make pre-contoured plates that are also a little bit thickened right over that symphysis. You know, when we use those standard recon plates, if you have an empty hole right over the symphysis, sometimes if there was a lot of stress there, the plate could break. I've seen this happen once before, and the pre-contoured plates, they sort of try to avoid that. You know, there's different methods of plating. Some people, you know, try to do it something very, very rigid, long, you know, six-hole plates, dual, you know, double plating with an orthogonal plate. And at one point, you know, some people felt that some type of dynamic plating was better, and we put, like, two-hole plates with two big 4-5 or 6-5 screws or something like that, and you would allow for some motion there. I typically use a 4 or 6-hole plate, depending on how much stress I think there is. Haven't done double plating for a long time. Now, there may be patients where it's not a good idea to plate them, but you need some anterior stability. So in those cases, you can do a definitive external fixator. Many of you have probably seen this. You can also do a definitive, what's called infix, which many of you probably have not seen because we don't do them at Temple. But the infix is basically when you put a device into the anterior inferior iliac spines bilaterally, like you would with a 2-pin external fixator, the one that goes in the AIIS that you see us do sometimes. So you put some type of fixation in there, and then you tunnel something under the skin. So it's like an internal external fixator. Some people have done this with locked plates. But the infix, when I use that term, is usually attributed to using a spinal instrumentation. So you put two, you know, bolts into the anterior inferior iliac spines bilaterally. You take a bar, you sort of shape it, and then you tunnel it subcutaneously across. And then you fix it to each of your bolts. using like spinal rods. So it's a way of not having to open the entire anterior pelvis and plate it. This is good, for instance, if you have a patient, let's say, with bilateral ramus fractures. Are there comminuted ramus fractures bilaterally? And to definitively fix it, you'd have to sort of like, you know, open the entire front of the pelvis and then do some type of infrapectineal plate that goes from, you know, left to right along the entire pelvic brim. And that's, you know, that's one way to do it. But if you think about it, it's an extra articular injury. You just need to sort of hold it together. And, you know, don't often have to fix ramus fractures anyway, so they don't have to be perfect reductions. You just have to kind of get them in the ballpark. You want to get the, you know, hips at the right height, the pelvic width, you know, back together. So so those devices can work. Those things have a little bit of a learning curve. I haven't really personally done them. There are certainly some complications. People put them through the bladder, etc. And I've had success with using definitive external fixators. So it's really the same concept. It's just keeping it out of the skin, or below the skin. And when you keep it below the skin with the infix, often those have to be removed, or that's the plan at least. So that can be done. You know, there are other cases sometimes if I have maybe patient with some type of dirty anterior open injury, or they've had a pelvis that's been packed open and hasn't been closed for a while, or I think that putting a plate in there is going to be something that's going to get infected. I will generally consider using some type of fixator, like an X-Fix. And you keep it on for like 6 weeks or something like that. The pin sites, they always get a little infected, so you gotta take a lot of care. It's not that functional. It's hard to sort of sit up all the way, but you try to do what you can with the frames to allow that. So there's enough about anterior fixation. So what about posterior fixation? Well, posterior fixation, obviously, for SI joint dislocations, sacral fractures, SI joint fracture dislocation, so the so-called crescent fracture, right? So the LC2, you get an iliac wing fracture going into the SI joint, and you get an SI joint fracture dislocation. So those are treated posteriorly. So let's start with that. That's a case you will see. Oftentimes, there's not a whole lot to do anteriorly. It's ramus fracture, perhaps, but... But this is where you often will need to address it posteriorly. So, this is something that the iliac fracture can be fixed with direct ORAF. You go in there and plate it posteriorly. You put the patient prone. And this is depending on where the fracture line exits. Sometimes this is something that can be fixed with iliosacral screws. So let's talk about other posterior lesions. So pure SI joint dislocations typically treated with iliosacral screw fixation. Now, most people, I think, try to do as much as they can percutaneously. You know, use traction, use manipulation of the iliac, wings. Sometimes people will put a femoral distractor with one pin in each posterior superior iliac spine, and combined with traction and, you know, manipulation, try to get things lined up, and then do percutaneous iliosacral screws. Some people feel that you should open these, that can be done posteriorly. But if you really need to see the SI joint, and you really need to, kind of visualize it, and you want to get it reduced and see it in front of you, then that's actually done anteriorly. You know, you sort of do a lateral window of the ilioinguinal approach, and you go all the way around the back. You watch out for the L5 nerve root draping over the S1 body, you can get all the way around to the SI joint. You can visualize it. You can then close it down with a small plate for assistance. And clamps. So if I have to open, reduce an SI joint, I'll usually do it that way. And as many of you know, I put the SI screws in supine anyway, so I can do an SI screw at the same time. So final thing about sacral fractures. So sacral fractures, some people feel you should treat them. If you need to fix them, that you should treat them with fully threaded screws. That's a so-called, that's like a position screw, you would have to worry about crushing sacral nerve roots in the sacral foramen if you use the partially threaded screw. Others feel that if you don't get any compression, you're going to get a non-union, and you should use partially threaded screws for all of these, and a unilateral nerve root injury is not going to hurt anybody in the middle of the sacrum. Those are two things to keep in mind deciding, those long, long, fully threaded screws don't exist in most trays. So you have to, if you want to use those, you have to make sure you have them available. U-shaped or sort of H-shaped, or those, lumbopelvic dissociations are another big thing I always try to tell you guys not to miss. These are like a bilateral sacral fracture. So anytime you see a sacral fracture that looks like it's a bilateral sacral fracture on your axial CT scan, you have to make sure you rule out that it's not a transverse, component as well, which you would be able to see if you looked at a sagittal recon image. And then if you put two and two together, you can recognize that it's a U-shaped sacral fracture. Now, that's a situation where you can get so-called lumbopelvic dissociation, where the the lumbar spine essentially is kind of dissociated from the rest of the pelvis. Therefore can lead to kyphosis and nerve root injury of bilateral nerve roots, and that can lead essentially to a cauda equina like picture, in which you get injury to both nerve roots, like from S1 or S2 all the way down. So motor function can be okay in the lower extremities, but they can have saddle anesthesia and overflow and constipation and lose full function of their bowel and bladder. So really important that you don't miss these. And these can be fixed and treated with so-called lumbopelvic fixation, right, where you span from the lumbar spine into the iliac wings bilaterally. Or unilaterally, but typically for a true lumbopelvic fixation, you go bilaterally on each side, and you try to prevent that kyphosis from recurring, and you often will decompress it posteriorly, and you may see a couple of these occasionally. They're relatively rare injuries, and that spinal instrumentation back there oftentimes will need to be removed because it can be very prominent. You've maybe seen a couple of those cases too. So I'm definitely over my time here. I mean, I think it is a sort of a big topic, but there are some tips, I think, even if you're not going to be definitively fixing pelvic fractures, you probably need to know, need to be aware of. I hope these little tips are helpful for you. Thanks.